Let's talk about reincarnation, past lives, and time that souls spend between incarnations, between earthly and interdimensional areas. Linda Backman back with us, and we'll get right to it on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. George Norrie with you. Dr. Linda Backman is a licensed psychologist with more than 40 years of experience in private practice. Dr. Backman studied, co-taught, and co-established the Society for Spiritual Regression that is now the Newton Institute, named after the late Michael Newton, the pioneering therapist. He passed away about 3 years ago. She has conducted thousands of past life and between lives hypnotherapy regression sessions. Back in 1997, Dr. Backman and her husband, Earl Backman, established the Raven Heart Center in Boulder, Colorado, dedicated to guiding individuals to discover their soul path. Linda, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, George. It's good to be back with you.
You know what? I was just in Boulder taping our Beyond Belief television programs, and the weather was nice. It was a little hot, but it was pretty.
It is a little hot by Colorado standards, but pretty Colorado all the same.
But COVID everywhere, Linda, my gosh. What, as a psychologist, are you getting any patients who are having a difficult time coping because of this?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I wouldn't say that's sort of the presenting issue that brings them to me, but I certainly talk to a lot of people about how are they dealing with it, you know, where are their fears coming from. And you know, as you would imagine, I get spiritual questions about what is COVID, you know, why was it created, and those kinds of things. So I think in one way or another, we're all sort of, you know, wishing we had what we used to call normal. Yeah.
Absolutely. So Linda, tell us about how a psychologist got involved in this kind of field of reincarnation, past lives, soul regression. How did this all happen for you?
Well, for me, I was unsuspecting, George. I was back in my, this will tell people how old I am, but which is fine. I was in my middle 40s. I was practicing as a general psychologist. I didn't know if I believed in reincarnation or not. It wasn't something I really thought a lot about, even though I've done a lot of grief counseling, I've been involved with hospice, but I wasn't, I didn't have a lot of awareness and knowledge about reincarnation. Very long story short, in 1993, my original psychologist colleague and friend, we built a group practice together of psychologists and psychiatrists. He passed at the age of 32 from a type of lung cancer.
Yes,
very sad, you know, from a human standpoint, horrendous. He died in April of 93, and within a day or two, I started having spiritual experiences that at first I thought, you know, maybe I was the one that needed a therapist or medication, but bottom line is I began to sense him around me. I intuited that he was telling me things, and I began to believe that I was seeing scenes in my mind's eye, especially in the dark, like in bed at night or early morning. I was beginning to see scenes in my mind that I felt were past life scenes. And so just to finish the story, because I think it happened the way it was all meant to happen.
Sure.
So I thought that was weird, George. I didn't know what to do with it, except that in my heart of hearts, I really believed I was sensing my colleague's energy. So anyway, I said to my husband, I'd already been married about 25 years at that point, to the person I'm happily still married to.
Is he a psychologist too, Earl?
Earl is a PhD in political science.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's not a psychologist. But, you know, both of us well-educated, but we had never spoken about reincarnation at all. So anyway, I said to Earl, who had known my colleague well, they were golf and lunch friends. I asked Earl to sit down and I said, you know, the classic thing you might say to a spouse, I said, honey, I need to tell you what's going on with me. If you think it's crazy, I think I almost wanted him to say that. I said, you just tell me you think this is crazy. So I explained to Earl what I was experiencing and he looked at me with his totally calm look. And I said, you don't seem to act like you think this is weird. And he said, no. So I said, why? And basically Earl said, he said, apparently I repressed what happened to me when I was a boy. And he said, when I was 8, 9, 10 years old, I spontaneously remembered my past lives, are all related to me. And he said, I knew details of my lives. I knew they were real. Don't ask me how I knew, but I did. But he said, back in the middle 50s, in Central Oregon, who would believe me? So he said, I apparently just tucked it away. I never told anyone. He said, yeah. He said, well, I've always believed in past lives. So
that made it easy for you, that's for sure.
It did. It did. Completely. Completely. And I think that was really, George, I think that was meant to be. I think it was meant to happen like that.
Sure. But did you ever, when you were developing your career, did you ever think you would get into that aspect of the field?
Not in any way, shape, or form.
No.
I mean, I was, yeah, no. I was very involved, as I said. I had a general private practice. I did, you know, all types of therapy you might think a psychologist does. But my passion that I didn't really understand back then was death, dying, and grief work. I had no trouble being around someone who was dying. I'd actually, some years earlier, worked alongside a pediatric oncologist when I lived in a city in the Southeast, and I was the counselor for the kids and the families. And I think that was all a precursor, just a forerunner to what I was going to step into later on. But no, I had no designs on becoming a regression therapist who, you know, has been working with the soul now for, about 26, 27 years.
What is, Linda, as far as you're concerned, the soul?
Yeah, the soul, I'll answer questions as candidly, George, as I can. And when I say to people, here's what I believe is true, this comes from client after client after client. So it's not, you know, something I intuited, even though there's nothing wrong with that. So what is the soul? The soul is an aspect of divine energy. The soul is, you might say, I like to say, the soul is spun out of the Tao, it's spun out of the Creator, whatever word people want to use, God, Great Spirit, whatever word works for people. It's an aspect of the divine, but the soul is designed to evolve. Our soul is not created in perfection. And I think that's where soul regression work sort of departs from some probably Western religious beliefs.
Was the soul created, obviously, to attach to our bodies? I mean, what is its purpose?
Very simple. The soul is an aspect of how we evolve as if we're focusing on Earth for a minute, which I know we'll depart from that too. But the soul has to incarnate in order to evolve. It's like the child has to go to school in order to learn. The soul does not learn at the soul level, at the spiritual realm level. The soul learns in body, not out of body.
Well, and they talk about what came first, the chicken or the egg. What did come first, the physical body or the soul?
I would say the soul came long before the physical body. Souls, and we don't, you know, have to veer off yet, but souls incarnate on Earth, but souls embody other than on Earth, outside of Earth, or what I call interplanetary.
I had always believed, since I was a child, and I've always believed in reincarnation, that we reincarnate until we reach a level of perfection, and then we don't reincarnate anymore. There's no need to. What do you think of that?
George, I think that is completely, that's what I've learned from clients over these many years, is that people will say, well, okay, Linda, well, so what's the point? What are we evolving to? What, you know, what's the purpose of gaining this higher level of evolution? And the bottom line is that we are evolving to become a spiritual guide ourselves. And then it's complicated, so try to get it to make sense. When we come into body, we bring a slice, a fractal, a holographic portion, however you want to word that. We bring a piece, it's like a slice of pie, into our bodies that causes us to be alive. The remainder of our soul is our higher self, which remains in the spiritual realm. As we embody and as we grow and evolve lifetime to lifetime, and of course we trip and fall, and we can talk about that. We have free will on Earth, so we sometimes don't make the best choices. But as we evolve, we gain wisdom and we gain more responsibility at the higher self level. So, yeah, we're seeking to evolve to a higher level, but that doesn't mean we're done.
Linda Backman with us. A couple of her books include Souls on Earth, The Evolving Soul, Bringing Your Soul to Light. Linda, in terms of the evolution of a soul, how it progresses, if someone, let's say a despicable murderer, starts off on the bottom level of all of this, will they automatically reach that higher level of perception eventually? I mean, how many times do they, even if they have to come back 100 times, will they evolve to that perfection level of heaven, or do they just stay in this low area forever?
Well, I think, first of all, when people ask me that all the time, well, Linda, what about Hitler and Saddam Hussein, those types of actions? So, first of all, I believe that's all free will choice, that the actions of, just to use Hitler as an example, those are free will choices. My understanding is that Hitler's actions weren't preordained. They weren't predestined. It was that human person making those choices. So theoretically, Hitler finishes his lifetime. He then meets with what I like to call an interrogatory panel. He crosses his soul, leaves that body, the body of Hitler. He returns back, that slice of soul returns back to the spiritual realm and is met by a panel of highly evolved souls who question him. What did you do? What didn't you do? How do you feel about those choices you made? If the soul owns up to their foibles, owns up to their inappropriate choices, then they will be met with, you might say, less of a negative response. If they don't own up to it, then my understanding is they are, it's not that they're never allowed to reincarnate again. They are. They're held at a lower level. We might call it fourth dimension. We might call it a level in the astral plane. They are forced to.
Is it hell?
Well, I think that's a great question. In my 26, 27 years of guiding regression, I don't think the religious description of hell is valid. I have never had a client leave the ending of a past life and cross over, return back to the spiritual realm, and go to a place that fits with what we learn in Western religion as hell. But the hell is, they're held, I would say they're held accountable for their actions.
What is an interplanetary soul, Linda?
So an interplanetary soul is a soul that is created to primarily incarnate somewhere other than on Earth.
Other than on Earth, okay.
Yeah. In other words, my understanding is that when an interplanetary soul is created, created is the best word that I can come up with, that soul is designed to incarnate somewhere that is not Earth. But those souls do come to Earth because I've had many of them as clients.
Interesting take. Now, an angelic realm soul, what is that now?
So maybe to make this a little bit more clear, hopefully, George, for people that are listening, my understanding is that there are three, I call it soul origin. So
three different types?
Three different types of souls, correct. And they're created, you might say, in three different locations in the higher realm at a higher frequency. So there are souls designed to incarnate on Earth that I refer to as Earth-based souls. There are souls that are designed to be interplanetary, and there are souls that are designed to incarnate and become, forget the word incarnate, scratch that, that they are, the angelic realm souls are created in a different location, excuse me, and they are to be part of the angelic realm that supports the divine.
Were they part of the fallen angels that occurred in the beginning of time?
I would say no.
Okay.
And I think there's a lot of different opinions about the whole notion of fallen angels that whole concept. No, they are an angelic realm soul. And, you know, we can go into these in a lot more detail because I've worked with angelic realm clients.
Sure, yeah, absolutely. Go ahead.
Yeah, an angelic realm soul is created to become part of the angelic realm that serves and supports the divine. And their energy is one of pure love and compassion. That's the kind of the entire orientation of their energy. They don't incarnate frequently at all, but when they incarnate, they incarnate, I would say almost exclusively, if not exclusively, on Earth.
Now, who created them?
Oh, I would say they're created, probably the best way to answer that is they're created by the Creator. They're created, you know, I'm not hung up on terminology, nor do I think that the work that I do is anti-Western religion. It isn't necessarily anti-Western religion, but at a frequency that is perhaps higher than we can even, you know, perceive or conceive, they are created by the Creator to serve the divine, and with a very with a very pure sense of love and compassion.
That's fascinating.
We need them on Earth, George, as you might imagine. We need the energy of angelic realm souls on Earth because of the struggles that humanity's going through.
Even though we may not even be aware that they're here.
Well, yeah. So how this all progressed for me is, as you know, and we can if you want to talk about Michael Newton. Michael Newton was once my mentor. Then I co-taught with him. And Michael would talk about souls that are designed primarily to incarnate on Earth, souls that are designed primarily to incarnate other than on Earth. He never spoke about angelic realm souls. Then I began my, you know, career as a regression therapist. And so that's probably, I don't know, 20, 22 years or so ago, as I began to guide soul regression, or what Michael Newton originally called life between lives, spiritual regression. That was his term. I began to guide that type of regression somewhere around 99, 2000 or so. And periodically, I worked with a client that we discovered was an interplanetary soul. Then maybe 5, 6, 7 years later, maybe 2005, 2007, I started noticing in my weekly regression practice, and I regress almost always far more than one client, you know, many times a week. I started noticing that in my practice, I was working with 50 to 60% of the clients coming to me, about 50 to 60% of them were interplanetary souls.
All right, hold on right there, Linda. We're going to take a break. We'll come back and talk more on Coast to Coast AM. We're going to take your calls next hour with Linda Beckman as we talk about reincarnation, past lives, and souls. And as a matter of fact, when we come right back, she said 50 to 60% of the study of the people she was talking about had interplanetary souls. And we're going to talk about that and what that means specifically. And welcome back, Linda Backman with us. Linda, you were talking about these interplanetary souls and that 50 to 60% of those people that you were looking at had this interplanetary soul system. That seems high, doesn't it?
Well, I think what we're saying, George, is that as I work with clients, you know, week in, week out, month in, month out, what began to happen, and I believe this is orchestrated at a higher level, that my spiritual guides wanted me to work more with clients, to increase the number of clients in my practice who were interplanetary souls for basically two reasons. One, for me to learn more about them in order to support them. And we can talk about the uniqueness of interplanetary souls and why they're here and why they need support. So I needed to learn more about them, and they, you know, the reverse would be they needed someone who would get them and help them understand their life, their qualities, why they're here. And so I think that was all orchestrated in my practice. So I wasn't, I think the important bottom line to say to people in regard to regression work is I don't give the information to the client. The client accesses the information simply with my support and facilitation. So these approximately 50 to 60% of my practice, the clients were discovering they were souls that didn't typically come to Earth, and that's kind of how that all happened.
Can a human being be soulless?
No.
They cannot. Have a soul, at least.
No. My understanding is if you are alive, what causes you to be alive is a slice, an aspect of your soul, not 100% of your soul in your physical body, because that would blow the circuits, that would energetically overwhelm our physical body. But no, if we're living and breathing, we have a soul.
What's a soul pod?
Well, so Newton talked about this.
I'm learning all these new phrases from you tonight, Linda.
Well, and you know, in some cases, I've somewhat, having studied with Michael, and I've changed some of the terminology that makes it a little bit easier, I think, to understand. When Michael Newton started doing his work to discover a broader understanding of the soul and incarnation and all of that, Michael used the term cluster group. And what he learned from numerous clients is that when our soul is new and ready to begin its incarnational journey, we belong to a group of souls. You could call it, sometimes I jokingly call it, soul homeroom or your soul neighborhood. So when the soul is created, you belong to a small group of souls with whom you incarnate most often. I felt like the term soul pod was a little bit easier to understand than cluster group.
Interesting take. Now, conglomerate soul group is what?
So a conglomerate soul group, and I mean, I think that's an important piece of the picture, especially for what's going on Earth right now. So a soul pod is typically about 10 to 15 souls. But that, so a soul pod, those souls have some related characteristics, but soul pods work together with other soul pods, and that's what I'm calling a conglomerate soul group, meaning large numbers of souls, large numbers of pods, almost like a stem of grapes or something like that, that could be 1,000 or more souls that have a similar agreement and commitment to the Earth. So that kind of leads into just a quick comment. There is a conglomerate soul group. I've come across this time and time and time again with clients in regression. There's a conglomerate soul group, meaning a group of pods that were originally, you might say, mandated, created to come to Earth to move humanity step by step through an evolutionary process.
They're moving us the wrong way, Linda.
And they're not, yes. I mean, it's not that they're, in my opinion and my understanding from regression, it's not that they're moving us the wrong way. It's that they keep failing. They keep failing in how they operate because Earth isn't populated primarily by evolved souls. Earth is primarily populated by an adolescent level in terms of evolution, an adolescent level of evolution soul, if you will.
Linda, in Jewish mysticism, there is something called the guf, which is a repository for unborns, for souls. That's where they apparently wait before a human is ready and they depart. Have you ever heard of that?
Yes, and I've actually studied Kabbalah, you know, pretty extensively in my own life. So this is what I love about understanding different spiritual traditions and teachings is that they overlap. So yes, there's a place in the spiritual realm. Some people call it the soul nursery, where souls are being prepared to incarnate, almost like a marsupial situation where that little tiny marsupial baby crawls out of the body of the mommy marsupial and into the pouch because they're not ready to incarnate. There's like a soul nursery in the higher realm.
And there was a movie with, I believe Julia Roberts was in it, and it was about the guff, and it had run out of souls. Is that conceivable?
It's interesting. I don't think I've seen that movie, but no, I don't think that's conceivable. I don't think we will run out of souls. Souls are newly created if they're needed. And then another topic that we can get into if you want is that souls can be incarnate. A soul can have two aspects of that soul, two fractals, you might say, of that soul's energy in two different incarnations simultaneously.
That's an interesting take. Let's talk a little bit more about reincarnation for just a second, if we can. So we constantly reincarnate until we reach this level of perfection. And in your opinion, how many human lives do you think are necessary to get to that point?
Well, I think that's a great question, George. I think the best answer is it depends on how we live each incarnation. So we come into body with, you might call it a pre-birth plan with intentions. On Earth, because we have free will, we can go against those intentions if we choose. So, but you know, just to kind of give an answer to that, a more highly evolved soul has probably had hundreds of lives, if not more than 1,000 lives. But it really does depend on what our choices are, what our behavior is in each lifetime.
Interesting take. Linda Backman with us. Her websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com. What are you working on these days, Linda?
Well, actually, I'm getting ready to start a six-month virtual course. I have taught a number of virtual courses. This one will be longer, more in-depth, more comprehensive. So starting in September, I'm going to teach three sessions per month, all types of topics, all related to the soul and what I do. And I'm really excited because I'm going to have some guest teachers. One of my favorite people in the world that I'm sure you know, it's going to be one of the six guest teachers, a guest teacher per month, is Lisa Garr.
So, oh, Lisa, we think the world of Lisa.
I love Lisa. So I have five others, but Lisa's going to start us off in September.
Well, that's great. Now tell me more about the Ravenheart Center that you have out there in Boulder.
Well, the Ravenheart Center is basically my work in guiding regression, my work in training people in regression and guiding what I call spiritual mentoring, spiritual counseling with people. So the Ravenheart Center, pre-COVID, I was traveling about 50% of the time, both domestically and outside the country. to teach and guide clients, and I've been home for about 6 months. But so the Ravenhurst Center is basically the name of the work that I do.
Great. Now, what is the Earth Council? What is that?
So the Earth Council, and this is kind of what you referenced just a little bit ago, a relatively evolved soul. I always hate to say highly evolved soul, but kind of to some people probably sounds a little ego-based. A highly experienced soul is a soul that serves on the Earth Council. It's like the Earth Congress or the Earth Parliament. These are guides that work together to basically do what they can to assist humanity only by serving. They don't literally force us as humans to do anything. They serve as spiritual guides. They don't always agree. They don't always agree with how they're going to operate to attempt to assist Earth. And as you might imagine, right now, there's a lot of, I hear about this from clients, there's a lot of struggle to figure out how to attempt to help Earth, given the various complicated circumstances that are going on our planet.
Do they want to help us?
Yes.
They do.
Yes. Yes. Those souls that serve on the Earth Council want to help us. There are other souls in the spiritual realm that would, prefer that we don't evolve.
Is that part of the Interplanetary Council?
No. There are, so, yeah, complicated. So the Interplanetary Council is like a parliament made up of, it's almost like the, it's a poor example, but I'll use it, our U.S. Congress. The Interplanetary Council is made up of evolved souls, higher selves of evolved souls from various locations in the universe, including Earth.
Is it like the Federation?
Well, it could be called that, and the reason I would, hate to put labels on it is because, what one person talks about and labels the Federation might be something different than I would, if I use that term. I do know there are souls in the higher realm that push back on evolutionary steps, decisions made to guide humans. There are other souls, I like to call them souls with nefarious energy, or souls that come more from the dark than the light, that would choose for Earth not to progress. But those are not the souls that serve on these councils, the two that we're talking about.
Why can't we remember our past lives without the hypnotherapy, of course? Why can't we just naturally remember our past lives? Is there a mechanism or a barrier that is put up for a reason?
Well, two answers to that, George. One is there are some people that can access their past life details and past life events and circumstances without regression. But some of our lives are, there's a veil, if you will, because without that veil, we might not step into intended aspects, intended relationships, intended circumstances in our life that are meant to balance, just to put it in simple language, meant to balance karmic decisions, karma, free will decisions we made in past lives. So like if I met someone and I began a romantic relationship with them, but in the most recent past life, I met them, fell in, I know this is kind of an overly romanticized version, but that they harmed me, then I might not decide to want to be in a relationship with them, and yet we need to balance that karma of sometimes choices that are made in terms of actions.
Well, is it a protective mechanism?
Yes, it's a mechanism that assists us to work on our own evolution.
I guess if we had all these past lives crossing over and we remembered all of them, we'd go a little nuts, wouldn't we?
Well, we might know very consciously that we've lived through not only challenging circumstances, because that's not the case, but that we'd live through and manage through some pretty challenging events.
What has been the strangest moment that you've had conducting some of these hypnotherapy sessions?
You know, it's interesting you asked that. There are probably a lot of strange moments, but I had what I would call a strange moment with a client either last week or the week before. This the client is an interplanetary soul. She discovered that in the regression. She's an interplanetary soul, came into body, discovered a past life where she was severely abused by someone. And and this is not, I don't want listeners to think this is only what happens or always what happens, but she had agreed at the soul level as an interplanetary soul to come into body, to go through this experience of abuse, to assist the soul of the abuser to learn alternate ways of behaving, to learn what in the regression was termed goodness. It was intense. That's not very common for me with clients, but I will say it was intense.
Linda, we're going to come back with our final hour and take phone calls with you as we talk about the reincarnation, past lives, and souls, all that and much more in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM.